Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. And by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again with Eero's hyper-fast, super simple Wi-Fi system. And now, the second generation Eero is tri-band and twice as fast. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero.com, select overnight shipping at checkout, and enter the code NSS. And by WordPress. WordPress powers 28% of all the websites in the world, including mine. Get 15% off your new website at WordPress.com/NSS. That's WordPress.com/NSS.
Goodbye video cables with Newtek's NDI. Tips for your Echo Show and the Nest Cam IQ recognizes faces. Live from Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, California, it's the new Screensavers!
Screensavers, I'm Leo Laporte.
Hey, I am Robert Herron.
What? Robert, haven't seen you in ages. Robert Herron, of course, the original production assistant on Call for Help.
I took Roger's job.
Took Roger Chang's job, and of course, he's a absolute fabulous AV expert, and Herron Fidelity is your company.
Yep.
Do a great podcast with our good friend Patrick Norton.
AVXL.com.
AVXL.com.
Yeah.
And it's really nice to see you. You know, it's the funniest thing, because that show, but that woman sure looked just like Kiki Stockhammer. Oh, my God! It's Kiki Stockhammer. She is legendary. Kiki, I don't understand this, though, because you look exactly like you did 20 years ago demonstrating Amiga's video toaster. You haven't aged a year. It's great to see you. The beautiful, talented Kiki Stockhammer. She works at Newtek, of course, and Newtek is in the house. We're going to take a look at their newest.
I'm liking it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
New stuff.
I had to. People maybe not remember you, but I have some video of you from the old Call for Help. Do you mind if I bring back some memories? This is Robert Herron.
Shocked the senses.
When he was first starting.
Yes, play button. You have your pause button. You have your stop button.
Ah, yes.
You were so young.
Play button, stop button.
When tech TV's child labor laws.
No, that's
we're being relaxed.
I don't know who that is. That's not Robert. Let me go back. This is Robert Herron on Call for Help, showing off the ATI All in Wonder. There's also another young guy on there.
This is almost 18 years old.
As well as TV. If it was just a video tuner card only, a TV tuner card only, you wouldn't have this. Exactly.
Right.
I told John, our previous caller, not only does it have TV in here, but it has TV out.
Wow.
So this is really, when
this
they
is
say
somebody's
wonder,
old VHS
wonder,
rip.
Everything. Bring the video in
of the show you and I used to do.
Now, what if I have a video card?
It's probably 1999.
Yep. I would say right around November-ish.
Holy cow. Add on TV tuner card.
You could tell it's November because of your haircut? Is that what?
All in one.
I'm telling you.
Something happened. It must be July.
Global warming.
Anyway,
I get too warm.
That's so fun to see Robert Herron. Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Actually, it is a little bit timely because we learned that the last kind of vestige of Tech TV is going away. As you may remember, Tech TV, the Tech TV you and I worked at, got purchased by Comcast, moved it down to L.A. It was there as originally G4 Tech TV, then it became G4. I went to Canada where Rogers was one of the affiliates of Tech TV. They said, we still want to do Call for Help, so I went up to do Call for Help in Canada. And did it for, I think, 4 years till 2000, maybe five or six. I can't remember, for a few years. So G4 Canada is still alive. The G4 US is long gone.
Yes.
Long gone. They turned into something and then something else. And I think the thing they turned into is gone, too. I mean, it really is dead and buried. But they were still doing it in Canada. And the weirdest thing is they were rerunning old shows that I had done. In fact, if you go to the G4 Canada website.
Well, it beats a lot of the cop reruns we were getting for the G4 Tech TV merger at the time.
Thunderbirds or Go.
Hey.
And all that. Here is the G4 Canada. And look at whose face is on there. So I haven't done a show for them in more than 10 years. But they're still airing, and it's kind of embarrassing. They're still airing. You know, there's
clearly
one. Amber MacArthur says, Leo, I've just found a new website called YouTube. You can upload your video. And people will send me notes saying, do you just discovered YouTube? No, that was 2004.
That's too much.
They're rerunning. Anyway, G4, Rogers, which owns G4, has announced that on September 1st, they're also going to put the lid on G4, which is, it's about time. So I think that now officially, except for one thing.
What?
When you and I stayed in San Francisco, right?
We didn't, true.
And Patrick, and none of us were invited to go to L.A. Kevin Rose, though, went down there, and they continued to do the screensavers, eventually changed it to the strangest thing, Attack of the Show.
Yeah.
And they had a host. It was Kevin Pereira. Who were the hosts down there? Kevin Rose. And
then Albrecht.
Alex Albrecht. And then a young woman named Olivia Munn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, who is now a movie star.
Yeah. Rockin'. Actually, folks were awesome down there, I have to admit.
Yeah, it was.
Until I got laid off yet again. So.
There she is. Olivia Munn with
used
Kevin
to be laid off.
She, this was, I think, I don't know if it was her first job,
there's
but
Kevin.
Certainly the job she's not telling anybody about. Way back when, eating hot dogs. Not something I had anything to do with. Although I wouldn't mind meeting Olivia Munn. Anyway, so that's it. The end of Tech TV in all of its forms. Unless somebody is still playing it. Probably, you know,
well,
somewhere in Abu Dhabi, there's somebody rerunning old VHS tapes.
They still have your face on the front of the webpage, though.
I know.
Clearly, there must be traffic.
There's traffic. In fact, I was looking at the ratings. From 2014 to 2015, they lost 56% of their audience.
Move Leo up the page.
Man, put more Leo. That's what we want, more old Leo. Coming up, we've got a great show. Andrew Cross is here. He's president and CTO of NewTek. They really are the company that makes this broadcast possible. Back to the very earliest days of Twit, we started switching video using the NewTek TriCaster. We've got the new TriCaster in here. This is the 8000 what? Pro? 8000?
Glorious.
Advanced edition.
I don't think we're ready for the advanced edition. Do you have a beginner edition that we can use? That would be probably better. Anthony Nielsen, he's advanced. He can handle it. Yeah. You look real pro behind there. Look at that. The only problem is the advanced edition has so many features that the control surface that we use doesn't have. We need more buttons on the. Can you put more buttons on the control surface, please? Anyway, we're going to talk about some of the new things NewTek's up to. In fact, something very exciting, which is a system for distributing video. You know, as you know, Robert, you use HDMI cable in your home.
Yep.
In professional installations, they'll often use serial digital interface, or SDI. That's what we have connected from all of our cameras into the TriCaster. We also use a router.
Expensive to terminate.
Yeah. Not easy. And we have to convert on the cameras HDMI into SDI. So Andrew's invented something called NDI, Network Device Interface. Is that what it stands for? It goes over Ethernet cables. And we're already wired everywhere. I'm very excited about this. We're going to talk a little bit about how that works.
IP
we also
video.
Have a new
love it.
Pan tilt zoom camera and a very clever box that will convert your HDMI or your SDI into a Wi-Fi. I'm going to review the new Nest Cam IQ. This is a 4K camera. It's very interesting for your home. Yeah.
Just picked up a 4K security camera.
Doesn't that use up all your bandwidth?
I overbuilt the recording system.
Smart man.
I can record about a year of video. I'm watching all the people all the time.
Let's see what you were doing at this time last year.
The insurance company loves it. When somebody screws up and you show them the video, it's like, oh, we normally pay people to go away.
Yeah.
We're not paying anything.
I love it. I love it on like cop shows like The Wire. They'll go to the convenience store. Oh, no, we erase those every week. There's no, we're not videoing that. What are you, crazy? Those VHS cassettes are expensive. And then they finally get the tape on a VHS 15th generation, and it's like little blurry blobs. Anyway, coming up, Tom the Fire Eater. He's not going to actually eat fire, but he's got a call for help for us.
We can help.
Megan is all in love with the Amazon Echo show.
Ooh.
Hey, finally an Echo that can do cat videos. We'll show you that. Jason Howell will explain the new backup and sync app that Google just put out and how it's different. Brian Burnett takes his PC outside for a little summer cleaning. Got to get the dust bunnies out.
I'm due.
Yep. Let's get started, though, in the top stories. We mentioned the end of Tech TV. I guess that would have to be story number one. Yeah, on Wednesday, it was Save the Internet. Did we say, is the Internet saved? Are we done?
Hardly. No? It's an ongoing battle.
The foes
of net neutrality.
Yeah. We went black and white. We've done this before. We did it during, the SOPA battle. We went black and white on Wednesday.
That's cool.
I know. We didn't
like that. It's subtle, but
some sites
would question why you're doing it.
If you went to Reddit, it would say, would type out 300 baud letters. This is what the internet would look like.
It was 300 baud.
It was. It was. You had to sit and wait.
I did.
But I didn't see a lot of, I thought Facebook was going to do something. I don't think they did anything. Google didn't do anything. I thought all these big companies that were really big on internet neutrality were going to do something. They didn't. And then the funniest thing is, of all people, AT&T joined the fight. This is one of the foes in the fight. It's like if the Russians joined the... anyway, battle for the internet. It's not over. Go to the battleforTheInternet.com. The best thing you can do is write your Congress critter.
Clearly.
Or call them. Phone calls are easy, and they affect it. And then, of course, the FCC is continuing to take... comments, I think, for a day or two more, and then there'll be a second round of comments. Everything you need to know, including why net neutrality is important, is available. There you go. That's what it would look like without it. Is available at battleforthenet.com. That's one of the big groups.
You have to hold these companies responsible. They can say publicly one thing. It's, of course, we want an open internet.
Oh, we want an open internet.
We want everyone to have all data should be free to flow as it should.
Course.
But when it comes right down to what deals they make on the back end, that's where you really need to pay attention.
Absolutely. So. And Netflix at one point said, we don't worry about net neutrality. We already made it. But that's the point, right?
Yeah.
That's the point.
If you bring a giant box, you can distribute your video handheld to all of these, every little node along the way. What kind of company has the resources to do
that? Yeah, Netflix does. That's it.
It's great once you make it. But for everyone looking to create something.
Well, you and I should take this personally because we're podcasters.
Yes.
We rely on the fact that we are equal on the internet to Netflix and Amazon and YouTube because otherwise nobody would watch our video and we'd never get to anybody. So I think it's really, for us, this is something near and dear to our hearts. It should be for you, too. The internet is the best force for innovation the world has ever created, for changing the world, for good and bad, but a lot of for good. And I think it's really important that we keep it free and open. We're not talking about government regulation of the internet, folks. We're talking about government regulation of giant companies that want to charge for access to you.
Yeah.
And you should at least read up on it. Make up your own mind. I'm not telling you what to think. Make up your own mind.
And if your representative comes back into town, that's when you should really go visit.
No.
The face-to-face is always
coming
the
back.
Best.
No, they know that. They're not coming back. They're all going to Afghanistan. It's safer there.
They plan the event and then do not show up.
Crazy. Crazy. Are you worried about SoundCloud?
Not really, although should I be?
Yeah, well, they laid off almost half of their staff this week without warning.
That's tough.
They're running out of money, but SoundCloud says we're here to stay, and I hope so. Do you use SoundCloud at all?
I've only used it in terms of when somebody published something, and that was the source or the place they put it, so I went there to go listen to it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, not really, but anytime you see a company losing 40% of the staff, well,
yeah.
Either it was overbuilt to begin with, and there should have been some writing on the wall to get the heck out, but those kind of situations are just tough.
It is
tough
said,
for everyone at all.
According to TechCrunch, they only have enough cash
financing
to make it for 80 days. and yet, there are so many people. In fact, Chance the Rapper, who got his start on SoundCloud, didn't need a label, has apparently kicked in some money. I hope that's true. I want to see more of that. He says, I'm working on the sound. This is on Twitter. I'm working on the SoundCloud thing as an artist who you wouldn't know if not for SoundCloud. And he's a perfect example of why you need something like SoundCloud. I want SoundCloud I put podcasts on there.
And services are really specialized in terms of maybe music discovery or spoken word discovery, things like that. For anyone to take advantage of. Those are the kind of services that we need more of. Unfortunately, it looks like they're going through a little restructuring. Hopefully, they can make a profitable quarter here or right. two.
We're rooting for you, Sam. Yeah. And I'm a member. I pay, and that's one way that you can do your part is to join SoundCloud, maybe get them some revenue. Elon Musk has a new website.
X.com, baby.
There's nothing on it.
The X.
www.x.com. That's actually his old website, isn't it?
His first love, apparently, or his first domain, or one of the first domains he acquired when putting together another company, and as that company was transferred out, he lost ownership of that. I think PayPal actually owned the X.com domain, and then he made a deal with them for undisclosed amounts of money to
buy it back.
Yeah, it was a personal thing, though, for him. He just wanted, like, it's like if you bought that first domain name that was all special and you forgot about it and somebody else bought it. This is him kind of taking a very expensive way to get it back. But
I have to say, I love Elon Musk just because it feels like we're living in a science fiction world where Elon Musk exists. He at one point tweeted, "I'm tired of the LA traffic, so I'm starting the Boring Company."
That's awesome.
Which is anything but boring. The plan is to bore holes underneath LA so that commuters can go in the tunnels. What's his latest tweet is he's up to something. "I'm excited to announce the launch of X.com. It's a little verbose right now." You saw that.
OpenAI and Neuralink.
Yeah.
Well, you combine that with the recent test of the Hyperlink or the Hypertube or whatever the heck it is that you should
Hyperloop.
Hyperloop. Thank you.
The Hyperloop, he said, "I'm not going to make it.
Successful test."
But I thought about it and he got other people to invest in it. That's a good way to do it.
Dubai wants the first one.
Yeah. I talked to Jason Calacanis, who is a friend of Elon's and has an inside story. I think I mentioned this last week, that his plan is really not the Hyperloop isn't for, like, fast railway transit, because the problem with that is the whole idea of a Hyperloop is like a big pneumatic tube that you get in and it shoots you to San Francisco from L.A. or vice versa. The problem with that, of course, is acceleration. If it shoots you too fast, your brain will splatter against the back of your brain pan, and that won't really be very good.
Good for cargo, not so good for
cargo is the key.
The brain pan is
cargo
not
so good. Cargo is so it's not a people mover, or maybe it will be, but I think the real power of Hyperloop was going to end up being for cargo under the Pacific Ocean, from China to L.A., for instance. Those iPhones that are in Boeing 747s could just be Hyperlooped like that. But I don't think you want to be in that.
You think about maybe 1G acceleration, steady, constant, where it just holds you in your seat.
You slowly.
Or maybe 2G to really just keep everyone in their seat.
I can't stop smiling.
You keep that going, and you get up to 700-plus miles an hour in a vacuum tube.
But then you have to slow down without having your brain pan hit the front of your head.
Like that Demolition Man thing where the whole thing just fills with foam and everyone gets trapped.
That'd be my solution. I think it's better for
not
cargo.
Very practical.
All right. Did you see? Okay, two great space pictures.
This has been an amazing week.
It's been a really good week.
We have the rover anniversaries. We've got
Jupiter's satellites. Red Spot.
Yeah.
Amazon released pictures of the Great Red Spot on Jupiter.
The detail of that.
Did I say Amazon?
Maybe.
I meant NASA.
It probably
sometimes it's confusing.
It went through an Amazon server.
Probably is on AWS. There's the giant red spot.
Glorious, man.
And then if you go to space.com and other places, NASA has done a render of, remember New Horizons? We talked about that. That was the satellite that went all the way to Pluto. It took, 10 years, John, to get there? It took a decade, I think, to get there. And they made it. And now they have released, based on the pictures and the data that they got from New Horizons, they have released a video. Let me see if I can play this for you. This is what they think Pluto looks like. I mean, they know it looks like because they have pictures. This isn't.
It's using actual collected data.
And then, of course, they
synthesizing this.
They synthesize it. So this isn't an actual picture, but this is what it looks like. The surface of Pluto, boys and girls.
I want these on websites or desktop apps where I can literally do Google Earth or something and just look around.
It's a long ride.
It's coming soon.
12-year ride, but there's the view from New Horizons.
It used to be just that fuzzy dot my whole life.
It's not even a planet.
The blur, but now
it's it's a dwarf planet.
Amazing detail.
Yeah. Look at that. Wow. Is that iron? We were thinking maybe that's iron ore. I don't know. It's very cold. This is 2 years old. I just saw it today. Anyway, thank you, New Horizons, and thank you, NASA, for doing some amazing stuff. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the new hardware from NewTek, which is kind of, in some ways, equally, you know, amazing. Certainly is for us.
In terms of getting quality imagery or image capture and all the technology surrounding it into a package that at one time cost you 10, 20 times, 30 times
more. If we didn't
more.
Have NewTek, could we do this? I don't think so. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans, one of the best lenders in the nation. I'd say the best lender. Actually, all you have to do is go look at their website and see all those J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards. Number one, year after year after year in mortgage origination. They realized, even though customers loved them, that the mortgage process was a little bit stuck in the past. They decided to update it, and they created Rocket Mortgage, an entirely online mortgage approval process. And because it's online, there's some real advantages. First of all, it's easy. You can do it on your phone, your tablet. It's as simple as can be. And because it's 21st century, Quicken Loans has made partnerships with all the big financial institutions, so you don't have to share paperwork with your mortgage broker. All you have to do is push a button, and your bank will send them the bank statements, the pay stubs, whatever. So they have all the information right there, and they get it in seconds. It's also transparent. You know exactly what you're getting. You can pick the rate. You can pick the term. You can see what they're doing. But they're crunching all those numbers, and based on your income, your assets, and credit, within a few minutes, and that's the third part, it's fast. Within a few minutes, they're going to get you a loan approval, whether you're buying or refinancing. Minutes! Not the last time we bought a house 3 years ago, it took us months, not months, not weeks, not days, minutes. From the best lender in the country, you got to love it. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. It's at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. rocketmortgage.com/NSS. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. rocketmortgage.com/NSS. I'm really excited about this NewTek stuff. I think you're going to start to see some of it in our own production. Although, I have to say, and Alex is our flow master, he's a NewTek expert, there are so many capabilities in these NewTek TriCasters that we don't use. We don't have to have, what do we have this for? We don't need this. This could be all imaginary green screen. We don't use all this. There's so much green. We could just, you and I could be up on Pluto and it wouldn't matter.
I would like that.
Anyway, more new stuff from NewTek. Andrew Cross, their president and CTO, will join us. But first,
cool gear.
Speaking of cool gear, have you got an Echo? Do you have an Echo? Do you use the Echo?
Two of them. I set up for my mom specifically.
Yeah. And my mom
make her life easier.
My mom has three Echoes. I gave her two dots.
Music discovery, probably number
she
one
loves
thing
it.
It's for.
She's 84 years old. She can, and now I just sent her the new Echo Show.
Oh.
She can call me. I see her. She sees me.
Oh.
She can also drop in on me. That's another matter.
Are you using the feature now that they've added where you can use them as intercoms?
Yeah.
Around the house?
Drop in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just like...
Mom!
Yeah.
Go away, Mom! I'm busy! Here, watch. Megan has some great tips.
I've been playing with my new Echo Show for a few weeks now. My semi-Luddite but very lovable husband hates it, but I love it. Sadly, his feelings for this thing are stronger than mine. Right now, one of the ways that I've convinced him is by letting him know that you can turn on Do Not Disturb mode. Here is how. The first thing you have to know is that there's a menu. Yes, there's a menu. I did not know that either. Swipe down from the top of the screen and then tap the button to turn Do Not Disturb on or off. You can also set a schedule for Do Not Disturb. Eventually, I'm sure the Echo Show will be able to use facial recognition to recognize that it's my husband in the room, and it will just turn off immediately. But until then, you'll have to use the menu. Prime Day has come and gone, but you can still get some good deals. If you're in the shopping mood, just ask the Echo Show, Echo, show me your deals.
Here are my deals.
This works on all Amazon Echoes and Echo Dots, but I find it much more useful to see the products and scroll through them with the Echo Show. If you have your Echo Show on a counter, chances are you might need to adjust the direction a bit depending on where you're sitting in the room. One way to do this is to put it on a Lazy Susan. This one is designed for a laptop, and I find that it works great. Another fun trick for the Echo Show is that you can use it as a photo booth. Just say, Echo, take my picture.
Okay, pick a camera. Saving to Prime Photos.
If you saw Leo and I review the Echo show on the screensavers, you already know that you can tell it to watch our shows on YouTube. But if you're ever feeling down, might I suggest doing this? Echo, play the Uptown Funk cat video on YouTube.
Playing top result from YouTube.
Now, if you are still sad after watching that, I don't even know what to tell you. I am Megan Maroney, and I host Tech News Today every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific. And I host iOS Today every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific. You can subscribe or just watch on your Echo show. And if you have any tips for the Echo show, you can email me at megan@twit.tv or find me on Twitter. I'm at Megan Maroney.
She triggered my Echo. It's playing. I wish you were playing that cat video. Think of the technology that we are using. I mean, voice recognition, the internet,
AI,
video, AI, and it's wasted, all of that to play dancing cats. Echo, what? Stop. Man. Should I drop in on my mom? Echo, drop in on mom.
Mom's show, right?
No. Yes. Yes, mom's show. Oh, no, I can't do this. That's terrible. No, Mom, I was just playing around. Sorry. Oh, I got to run. I'm in the middle of a show. Sorry. I love you. Yeah.
Oh. Technology is too good.
Oh, I feel bad now. Bye. Echo, stop. Did you hear her? She said, oh!
Oh, man.
Sorry. She said, you have to promise me never to drop in on me because it's in my bedroom. Andrew Cross is here. Dr. Cross, it's so nice to see you. Welcome back.
The same goes.
Andrew is the president and CTO of NewTek, an amazing company. As you know, we live via NewTek. Without NewTek, we wouldn't have this network. We wouldn't be able to do a TV station, in Petaluma, California. So we're very grateful to you over years. But you are always inventing new stuff. And you have something new that you wanted to show us, and I wanted to see it, called NDI. First of all, what problem does NDI solve?
Well, let me ask you a question. Well, at least make an observation. You know, it is crazy that we have digital cameras, digital phones, digital TVs, computers, and yet they're all connected to the internet except video that's different.
Yeah.
Isn't that strange? I mean, how can we be here?
My mom's calling me. Hold on. It's all connected, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, she's calling me. I'm sorry, Mom. I can't talk. And by the way, that was on my watch. So you're exactly right. Yeah. I mean, this is a digital era we live in.
It is, and everything's connected, and yet somehow we have evolved to the state where we have digital interconnects connecting cameras to computer switches and TVs that doesn't use Ethernet. It's bizarre. It's the only thing that kind of stands apart.
Yeah, because Ethernet really is the lingua franca. It's what, in fact, that's what Bob Metcalfe wanted to create, was something that would let you talk.
That's true. And look, I mean, it's changed the world beyond anything. I mean, look.
I can talk to my mom!
I know, and then she called you back on your phone.
On my watch!
I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? And you know, your viewers are watching you on the internet.
It's amazing.
Everything. I mean, we have billions of devices connected to billions of devices.
She says, did you just FaceTime? No, but that's okay. She doesn't know that. I'm just sending her my heart. Now, see, look at that. I'm sending her my heartbeat, right? It's amazing what we can do. So we want to make cameras as simple and connectable as all of these computer devices.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, cameras have been digital for years. Why on earth are they going through separate connectivity? It makes no sense.
Right now, what we do is these are kind of consumer-grade cameras, so we have they only have HDMI out, and we have a little box underneath that converts that to serial digital interface. Yep. And that's what the TriCaster
that's
wants.
Correct.
So we put wires, and we're on a raised floor, so the SDI wires go from here, probably not even to here to the TriCaster, but here to the server room where there's a switch.
Well, you have completely separate SDI gear.
Completely separate. Now, what's interesting is for audio, we've been doing it over Ethernet cables for a long time. We use some stuff from Telos called the Axia system, and I've been doing that for almost 10 years now, and it's we couldn't do what we do if we weren't able to route audio around.
I mean, if you try to imagine going back to running analog audio,
It would be crazy.
Yes.
So why are we doing analog, or not analog, but this weird video sync? Yeah. Can we make this better?
And so, you know, what we did is we said, look, the world's, I mean, you can look at every area of tech. The world is going to end up moving video around over IP. It's a given. I mean, look, you're delivering it to your, it's actually kind of crazy. You're delivering your show 5,000 miles away to your customers digitally, and yet we can't deliver video, 100 feet?
We could barely go 100 feet.
Yeah. Over Ethernet. So you're delivering it to your viewers over Ethernet, but we can't move video around here.
So this is going to allow us to route video over Ethernet.
Well, what we did is we've been doing real-time on computers for 10, 15, or probably 20 years at this point. And so, you know, because we come from the computer end of the spectrum instead of the traditional hardware end of the spectrum, we've been messing around with Ethernet and doing video for Ethernet for a long time. And so about 3 years ago, what we did is we said, you know what, we believe this is the future, and we're going to take what we have done and we're going to give it to the world. So we did that. We took NDI and we said, look, the NDI SDK, all the code, all the IP that we've developed, we let anybody who wants to develop an application that uses NDI to use it.
Has it become easier with just faster networking standards like gigabit and beyond? Or was it a bandwidth issue at all in terms of having that video source separate?
You know, I don't think so. And the reason why is because a lot of the, you know, there's been this trend towards IP video for quite some time at the production side of things. So, you know, you can go to the big NAB shows and people are talking about video over IP, but they're talking about doing it over 10 gigabit Ethernet. And the thing is that's great, but, you know, one of the revolutions that's occurred is that every office building is wired for Ethernet now. So why on earth shouldn't they be able to be video facilities? I mean, every corporation wants to produce video.
But not 10 gigabit.
No, they're not.
They might be 100 megabit, but or gigabit,
yeah,
right?
So NDI is designed to work on gigabit because, you know, the benefit of that is it works for everybody.
And it's pretty much universal.
Well, it is universal. I mean, it's literally universal, probably by the definition of the word even.
Right.
And so we gave that away, and, you know, it was a good idea at the time. Half the company thought I was completely crazy to suggest this because it was giving away 10 years of what we'd done.
Right.
But,
you could have licensed it. That could have been a very...
Yeah, but...
Were there competing standards? Is that one of the reasons you wanted to set a... we need a single standard, obviously.
Yes, and that's the thing. So at the high end of broadcast TV, there is a standard called SMPTE-2110, which moves uncompressed video around over 10 gigabit Ethernet, and it's great. It is a Ethernet version of SDI. It serves it does that great.
But who has 10 gigabit?
Well, I don't.
I don't either.
And
I do have gigabit everywhere, though. You're right.
But what we wanted to do is make it available for everybody else because, you know, the world isn't all at the top of the pyramid. And we wanted, you know, the companies are doing more and more video. People like you have pioneered the way that anybody can make shows. And we wanted anybody to be able to do that. And so, you know, we gave this thing away. And our view as well was, so, you know, we come from the software side of things. So we gave away the SDK for this, the software development kit, and said, you know, application vendors, it's all yours. You can make what you want with this. And that was important to us because I think you were talking about iPhones and things like this. And the next generation of video tools is going to be made by people that are probably in their basement right now. And they don't know, they can't go and implement IP standards themselves. What they want is an easy way to make video work on an Ethernet.
Right.
And
right.
That's what I would have wanted if I was just a single guy developing cool stuff. I would want, somebody give me the way to do video. Yeah.
Right. I don't need to run wires.
I don't want to do the development. I just want to be able to make something that takes my idea and makes it real.
Let me ask you some technical questions. Do you have patents on this?
We license it for free. We have committed that.
So you do own the technology, but you're saying we're going to give it away.
I should be clear on why we do that, because there's lots of technology that goes completely open, and everybody can go off and implement their own versions. Now, nothing works with anybody. You have to create interop stuff. You know, the best technologies are where a company takes it, owns it, develops it aggressively. You can think about, you know, like if you're in graphics processing, you know, like what NVIDIA have done with CUDA is it works on NVIDIA cards. Mm-hmm. And it is the de facto standard for supercomputing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is because at NVIDIA, they give it away. Anybody can use it. And, you know, I can go make applications with it. Heck, our applications, TriCast is running CUDA code. But they stand behind it. They make sure it works. There's somebody I can call when something goes wrong. When it doesn't do what I want, and there's somebody every year thinking about how to make it better and better, and that is what we're looking to do. And so we're not looking at this as a money-making exercise. We don't believe that the interconnect between this place and this place should be where people make money. So we're just helping the industry, hopefully, to, you know, to make all of that work and to have somebody stand behind it. And I'll personally reply to emails people send asking questions. I mean, you know, that's our goal.
And the TriCaster will use NDI eventually, or we're SDI?
It absolutely uses NDI. And so, you know, the TriCaster today will run with SDI and NDI.
Nice.
Because, you know, it's never going to be a discontinuity where people stop using one and suddenly move to the other.
But that's interesting. So right now with SDI, I have to have 8 different SDI cables. Yeah. Can I have one Ethernet cable?
Yes. You can plug one cable in and you can get access to every source in your studio.
And that's amazing.
That makes it so much more convenient. And the fact that you're able to do that over gigabit.
Yes.
I've seen in, like, some companies will deploy 10 gigabit for fiber between, say, switches. But within the local, it's still gigabit only.
So how does it switch? Is it switching? How does it know what the source is?
Well, so NDI isn't just moving video from here to here. We've solved the problem of, okay, how do you go out and find all the video sources on the network?
So it actually goes out and looks.
Yeah, it goes out and says, hey, so it's kind of funny because when we started working on this at NewTek, we designed it around, hey, maybe left 10, 20 sources, and then we have a whole bunch of engineers.
Oh, we probably have 80 or 90 in here.
Well, that's what quickly happened. Yeah. Suddenly you've got huge lists of sources, but it is.
It can handle that.
Absolutely.
Because right now we have a $30,000 physical box. That has to switch. It has 72 ins and 144 outs, and actually we've outgrown it.
Yep.
So this would grow. And
that's exactly right.
Amazing. Now, is there? There must be compression on both.
Yes, we compress.
What do you use?
So we on NDI we use proprietary compression. That is, and I should say why. Our goal, we want to run on any computer anywhere, and so we have made the fastest codec in the world. That's one of the things that we've spent the last 10 years doing and that we're giving away.
Yeah.
Is that, it needs to run where it takes, 2% CPU usage to decompress an HD stream so that people can make applications and using it coming in from the Ethernet is no different than bringing it in over an SDI cable. They need to be the same.
Right.
And so, we use compression. And that is an area where lots of people say, well, why do you use compression? And that's kind of a no-brainer question.
You have to.
Well, you have to. But think about this. The world, it would be crazy not to.
You can't do uncompressed video over a gigabit.
You can't. But think about this. The why would you? If you can get 20-to-1 in compression easily these days.
Right. And high quality. I mean, every signal you're watching at home, including this signal, obviously, is compressed.
Well, this is probably compressed.
This is heavily compressed.
Yeah, probably 100-to-1. Yeah, 20-to-1 is nothing. But it's like if you can get 20 times the money.
Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you? You'd be crazy.
And are you limited at 1080p?
No. Because, look, this is a great thing. We're a software company. To us, the resolution is two numbers.
Right.
So we can go any resolution up to billions by billions, although I'm sure that you run out of bandwidth.
Does it become bandwidth limited?
Yeah, it's just purely bandwidth limited. Okay. Yes. So, you know, we have TriCasters now that do 4K, for instance, and they're doing 4K all NDI.
With appropriate networking gear, are you able to support multiple streams and multiple recordings?
Absolutely.
How much easier is that if you think about it from the point of view of the broadcaster, that we don't have to have a big... It used to be you have a patch bay, right? You'd patch one solicitor. Then we got electronic patch bays. That's what we use kind of now.
Just the cost of implementing a distribution system for SDI.
It's insane.
It's such an order of magnitude.
That was a big cost for us. It was one of the biggest costs for us.
And if this can be integrated with consumer-grade or even business-grade switch hardware and things like
I personally think it's bigger than that because once you've worked this way, you just can't go back. And suddenly you're doing things and thinking about ways of producing shows that you couldn't have before.
So are we using NDI now? No, because these are all SDI cameras. So we've got to buy new cameras?
Or a new
converter box?
Well, you can use converter boxes, and that's one of the things. So we invented, we gave away NDI about 3 years ago. And one of the things that we announced just last Wednesday was we announced a box like this.
The Spark box.
Yes, the Spark box, which basically takes an HDMI feed. So this is actually an HDMI feed off a PlayStation in this case.
But wait a minute, this has antennas.
Yeah, so this does wireless video, which
is... This is Wi-Fi?
Yes, this is doing the video for Wi-Fi. So even though it's on our desk, I mean, literally the only connections to this are the power and then the PlayStation.
Right.
And then, you know, I'm being able to bring
I could play a Little Big Planet here.
There you go.
So I'm playing this on the PlayStation 4, but the video is coming through Wi-Fi via the Spark box.
Yeah, so this video is coming Wi-Fi via the Spark box. It's going into your wireless network, and then your TriCaster was actually...
I love it. All right, you can turn down the sound. This is too loud. My little sack man is lost in space.
But it's
running that's cool.
With really very, very low latency. You know, less than your average TV set has these days.
Oh, yeah, that felt responsive.
Is it okay to overlay this technology on an existing network, or is it something you would rather keep it separate
dedicated
for a more pro?
Yeah, for instance, our audio, we cannot share that with a regular IP network.
And here, I think we're just sharing it, and it works.
Wow.
You know, honestly, on a true high-end production, you're going to want to share
right
them. I mean, that's just
right
common sense.
Right.
But because NDI has... you know, really has been adopted. I mean, in the software world, this has been adopted by everybody. Every one of NewTek's competitors, which is great. We want.
Well, that's
that
what I was going to ask you. So are there competing standards? And are people... Do you have to woo people to use NDI? What's the...
Honestly, the uptake of NDI is... I would love to say, wow, I had this foresight to create this thing. And I didn't. I mean, we thought it would be used by TriCaster competitors. And it has been.
It has been.
But it's been used way outside of that. I mean, we have companies like XSplit who make video game streaming software. They have, you know, 5 million plus customers. I mean, the scale of that compared to, you know, video production is just staggering.
Right.
Every one of those is now available for NDI. OBS, the free, I mean, it's used by tens of millions
OBS
of customers.
OBS, everybody
yes
uses, yeah.
That supports NDI now.
Really?
I mean,
it
really,
nice
in software, almost everybody has supported it. So if you... It's
much
actually
easy to implement. That's why somebody like OBS is an open source project.
Yes.
They're not going to implement
it. And that's absolutely been our goal. It's got to be easy. But when you think about this... there are almost certainly more NDI jacks available for people to hook up to than there are SDI jacks in the world.
Right.
Because when you get
every computer.
Yeah, I mean, but when you get into the, you know, the tens of millions of OBS users and think the scale of that and then think, well, let's compare that to people who have SDI jacks on the back of the computer, it's not even close.
Right.
And so, you know, what we've done with these devices is you know, we're making it easy for people to bring HDMI and SDI video directly into pretty much any software application, and not just TriCasters at all.
We have another toy that also is using NDI. This is the NewTek NDI
PTZ
Pan Tilt Zoom Camera, PTZ.
Yes.
So... if you look at this, it does have a coax SDI out on it, but we haven't connected it. We've just connected a single gigabit. And this is on our company network. This isn't
correct
even a dedicated network. Single gigabit port. Can we see the video output of this?
You should be able to.
Yeah. There you
go.
And in fact, you're controlling it on your... You're going to be able to control that on your laptop. There it is. Look at that.
So
you!
Is the controls obviously also going over the IP?
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, it's almost mind-boggling to think about this. We have one cable hooked into this. It is doing power because obviously the camera's
powered. Oh, it's power too. It's PoE.
Yeah, there is no power. There's not.
There's nothing. There's one cable.
There's power. It's doing the video. It's doing the audio. It's doing tally. So there's tally lights on the front, and it's doing the PTZ control on one cable.
Wow. How much is that? I wanted that.
So they retail for $2,790.
You know, you'd pay that much for a lot more sometimes for a studio camera.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is certainly on the affordable end of the spectrum.
PTZs are very expensive, and so that's a great deal, actually.
Does the software package incorporate any kind of auto-tracking or pre-programmed paths for the camera to follow?
Yeah, so you can create presets. So first of all, I should say, and this is, you know, it's hard to underestimate this. So, you know, our camera... it supports NDI, which means it works with, I mentioned, tens of millions of applications. You know, it's everything from, obviously, TriCasters.
That's what's great about software, doing it in software.
It's
unlimited.
It is.
If it's an open standard that others are adopting,
that's exactly right.
It's usable at that point.
Right.
And you're not locking yourself into a standard that nobody else supports.
No,
that's key.
That's absolutely right. And so, you know, any one of those, we've standardized the way you control this camera so that any piece of software can control the preset positions, can move it around, can control it. And so, you know, this is really quite game-changing. I think everybody kind of acknowledges that 10 years from now, we've just got to be doing video over IP. So what I hope is that, you know, with NDI and with the introduction of these devices, which we're aiming to make really as affordable as possible, that, you know, people kind of look back and think, well, this is the kind of one of the dates where it actually became real. We all kind of knew it would happen, but this is one of the important dates where it actually happened.
And you were saying there's low overhead with the NDI standards so that it could be deployed on devices that might not have extreme compute power or something like that.
That's exactly
any
the goal.
Little,
yes, I mean,
a camera and a mic and a chip.
That's the goal. That's the goal, awesome. Absolutely. Yes.
Absolutely cool.
Somebody in the chat room is saying, can you compare it to RTSP?
So RTSP. So the,
I'm not familiar with that, so you'll have to.
Oh gosh! I mean, we
is that a competing
RTSP is a transport standard.
Okay.
So it is a way to that is somewhat standard between getting devices from cameras to computers. The problem is everybody has different RTSP addresses. They use different protocols. They, you know, every camera has a different set of. They're putting it out on different ports.
Got it.
Our goal with NDI has been to make it plug and play.
IP is a standard that's well supported,
yes,
everywhere. Right?
That's right. And you know the goal for us is NDI is about making it easy for people and not needing to worry. I mean, RTSP probably nobody knows really what it is. If you have an NDI application, which is easy to write, it is dead easy to get one of these camera feeds in, one of these converter box feeds in, and it will just work. It will get automatically detected. It'll get automatically configured, and it will just work. You know, there are lots of other ways to move video around over IP, but nobody has made it accessible to everybody, which is our goal.
And switching is pretty instantaneous because it's a network protocol?
Yes. I mean, so
that's one issue we have with our SDI box. If we wanted to switch to an input that wasn't already dialed up, there's a delay, and there's also,
yes,
a sync issue.
Yes.
And so it takes a second or two to pick up that signal.
Yes. So, you know, that's obviously a slightly complicated question to answer because, it depends slightly on the software that's actually doing it.
Right.
But at an NDI level, you can be receiving as many streams as you want because on one Ethernet cable, you can get, you know, 7, 8, 9 streams of video. So,
well, that's plenty, actually.
Yeah, so you know,
not bad at all.
That's
high really
def video.
Wow. Yeah, that's correct. So you don't, switching doesn't really quite mean the same thing because,
right,
it's not like, okay, I need to move this Ethernet cable over,
right,
from source A to source B.
Right.
You can bring source A and B at the same time.
Right. Right.
And so you can switch them over whenever you want and switch backwards and forwards at, you know. I mean, look, I'm running a laptop here and I'm running two video sources, one from the camera and one from the, you know, the converter box here, you know, at once.
That's neat. So. Andrew, always exciting to see what you guys are up to at NewTek. Really breaking through in so many areas, making video production available to people like me, to schools, to churches. And of course, to professional broadcasters, a lot of whom are wondering why they spend millions of dollars on their Grass Valley switcher when they could just be using it. Amazing TriCaster. So thank you for what you're doing.
It's not cheap.
Yeah.
This is a great alternative.
Well, it's so limited. You know, and of course, we're 100% SDI because of the TriCaster. We want to support SDI. But I'd love to, you know, that's the next step for us when these cameras, which are currently HDMI, once we convert those to network, that would just be the greatest way to do it. We'd save us a lot of money on the infrastructure we have to support.
Maybe troubleshooting and headaches, too.
Andrew Cross, he is the chief architect of the Network Device Interface, or NDI, and, of course, president and CTO at NewTek, newtek.com, and that's where you can find out more about all of this.
That's correct.
It's really a pleasure. Thank you for coming in.
It's my pleasure to come.
And in all sincerity, thank you for enabling everything we do at Twit. We couldn't do it without you. We'd be doing audio if it weren't for NewTek. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I've got another camera to show you. It's an IP-based camera, this from the Google company Nest. But first, let me tell you about Wi-Fi. Because now that we're putting all this stuff on our Wi-Fi, we need better Wi-Fi. Thanks to Eero, we've got a solution. And I have to say, I just got the new Eero Plus system, and it blows me away. This is the second generation Eero. And they have doubled the speed of the original Eero. The base unit looks the same, but look at these little beacons. You just plug them into the wall. I have to say, in our house, we used to have 5 Eeros because we have a fairly spread out house. Now I can do it with a Eero base station and 2 beacons. It's faster than it was before. It's more reliable. And I've got a nightlight. Those Eero beacons double as a nightlight, which is awesome. You're going to love Eero's enterprise-grade Wi-Fi system. You just download the Eero app on your iOS or Android device. It gives you total control. We can do things now. For instance, we can use our Amazon Echo. I could do it right now. Echo, pause Michael's internet. And unfortunately, our son at home is now offline because I've taken, you can name all the devices on the network. I got 42 devices on our network at home, I know, because Eero tells me. I can assign them. So Lisa, there's some assigned to Lisa, some assigned to Leo, and some, I'm sorry to say, assigned to Michael, our 14-year-old. But, you know, that's a handy trick. By the way, he can't then say, Echo, unpause my internet. I have to do that in the Eero app for him.
Foiled.
Foiled again. That's just one of many reasons why you're going to love it. Of course, WPA2 encryption. The thing that really transforms Wi-Fi and that excites me about Eero is when you buy a router from the old school guys, it is never going to get updated. And if it is, you have to find out that there's an update, go download it and install it and hope that it works. Eero is constantly updating, constantly improving. The software gets better. The hardware gets better. You're always getting a better signal. And it works with all your devices it's so smart that it will actually reroute and optimize on the fly. So it says, oh, you're watching Netflix on this device. We're going to make sure you're on the fastest path. Eero.com is a Wi-Fi system that is perfectly tailored to your home. In fact, more than ever now with the second generation Eero and the Eero Beacon 3. It just, if you like it, if you're a geek, you like the stats. It's a tri-band, so they have a third 5 gigahertz band now. It's MU-MIMO X2, so you've got lots of antennas in there. And I have to say, the speed is dramatically faster, partly because they've got a faster processor in there as well. And with the addition of a new Thread radio, Eero can connect to low-power devices. Thread is that Google standard, like locks, doorbells, other sensors, and more. It is really fantastic. Expanding your coverage, easy enough. You say, I want to build an addition, just get an Eero Beacon, you plug it in, and you're covered. It's automatic. It just does it. Free overnight shipping when you use our offer code NSS at Eero.com, Eero.com. Just make sure when you're checking out to select overnight shipping and use NSS as the promo code, and they'll make it free. The new Eero Pro is fantastic, and I highly recommend it at Eero.com. Use the offer code NSS. You like it, right, Lisa? She's very happy with the new Eros. That's actually the secret motivation for all of this. When your spouse goes, the Wi-Fi's down again, and it's your responsibility.
Fix it.
Fix the Wi-Fi. I got, you know what? For a long time, that was a common refrain in our house, and it hasn't been since Eero, right? It's been working beautifully. I'm going to give you my review of the Nest Cam IQ. Just got it. Very interesting. That's something we had in the house. Then Lisa said, can we not have cameras in the house? Thank you very much. So we have them here. They're watching us right now. Google has launched a new backup and sync app for Mac and PC that kind of brings together a bunch of capabilities Google had before. Jason Howell, thank God, is here to explain how it all works. Jason?
It's often the case that people won't take backup of their important data seriously until something happens and it's too late. Let me tell you from experience, don't wait until it's too late, especially because cloud backup is so dang easy nowadays, and in many cases, it can be free. Google just released a new app for Windows and Mac computers called Backup and Sync that enables users to back up their most important files and folders to their Google Drive account, depending on how much available storage they have, of course. Now, I've installed the app on my Mac here at work, and when I go through the setup, I can select any number of folders on my machine that I want a real-time offsite backup of. In this case, I have my documents folder, pictures, and desktop, and I'm shown just how much space each folder will occupy in my Google Drive account. When the tool encounters any photos or videos on my computer, I can either choose for those to sync to the cloud at their original size, which actually counts against my cloud storage quota, or I can have them converted to high quality, which is 16 megapixels for photos and 1080p resolution for videos. And here's the cool part about that. Those won't count against my storage quota at all. If I'd also like those to be included in my Google Photos library, I can tap here to make it so. And finally, I can choose to have the many files and folders currently residing on my Google Drive account then synced to my computer for access on my desktop without the need for a browser. And once it's all set, I just tap and start the process. And this could take a while depending on how much I'm actually syncing and the speed of my connection. Now, when I go into my Google Drive account in the cloud, I can find all of my work files in the computer's My iMac folder in the cloud. And the best part, any new files that I save into those locations on my work computer will automatically make their way to the cloud for continuous backup of the most important stuff on my desktop computer. Thanks a lot, Google. I'm Jason Howell, and you can catch me every weekday on Tech News Today with Megan Maroney and every Tuesday on All About Android.
Thank you, Jason Howell, Robert Herron, Leo Laporte.
You said you
have security cameras in your, is it your office?
No, this is for a facility I help manage.
Okay.
And we set up currently about 35 1080p cameras and a couple of 4K going to a Synology box.
Yeah, we do the same thing here. We have a Synology recording all that. But that takes a little bit of skill. They got you.
Once it's set up, it's fine. I will say the auto updating and maintenance is
nice.
Pretty self-sufficient.
I did not want to have that complicated a setup.
But you had to dig into it, every little aspect of it, just to get it right.
Yeah.
I mean, once it's done.
So I thought, I'm gonna trust Google. I'm gonna trust Nest. We have, as you see, in fact, there's one right here. Drop cams. We've been using drop cams forever. Nest bought Dropcam.
Okay.
And so now we have the new Nest cameras. I have the outdoor cameras watching our backyard. It's kind of fun.
Are they generally just wireless cameras that just require a power source?
All they need is power.
Nice.
They're Wi-Fi. I'll show you real quickly our driveway. One of the things I really like about the Nest cams is if you pay for it, and it's not very expensive, they have recording, but not on a local Synology. They have the recording is available online, so I'm here. I'm not at the office and not at home. I can watch. That's my backyard right now, and I really love this feature. I can go back in time and even see that orange dot. That's movement in the. There's a car going by. Okay,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so you can see. In fact, if I convert to hours, it's minutes now. But if I convert to hours, I'll see all the movement. In fact, I probably find myself.
That's one of the ways you make the system somewhat manageable is to have it so that it's only recording on motion.
Yeah, exactly.
Or some event.
And you see how clear that is? Now, that's a 1080p HDR view, okay? High dynamic range view.
Nice.
And it really does look crisp. What's interesting about the Nest Cam, this is the driveway cam. Let me show the Nest Cam IQ. The Nest Cam IQ is a 4K sensor.
Ooh.
But now you don't want to stream 4K over your Wi-Fi in general because.
That needs some bandwidth.
That's a lot of bandwidth. So what we do with this, in fact, I'm going to show our studio right now. And what they do is they can zoom in and they can take a 1080p. So this is 1080p.
Fantastic. But
they use the 4K as, in fact, what it can do is it can zoom in on Jerry. These are all known faces, so it's not doing anything right now. But what happens is it learns the faces it sees on a regular basis, and then it will zoom in on an unknown face. It was a little weird at first. There's the camera. It was a little weird at first because we had some birthday balloons. It thought those were humans. And it kept zooming in. It says, I don't know who this is.
Well, now you know how to get around it. Just float a balloon with a face on it.
You can also pick zones, which I like. So I can pick a zone that I will get notified for motion. I've turned off the notifications here. But I can create a new zone and say, look, I want to know if somebody sits down at this table. And you can actually say, notify me for this zone alone. What I've done in my backyard, for instance, I have the garden path. That's zone one. And I have the back hillside. That's zone two. So I can judge those notifications and say, well, there should nobody ever be anybody in zone two.
They'll often also add where instead of having it only focus on a specific area is to ignore a specific area.
Right.
Like if you have a tree that constantly moves in the wind and if you have it set up for something.
You don't want to see that anymore.
It's constantly recording, so it's nice to be able to block off
certain
things.
That's what's kind of cool about this. This learns, there we are sitting there talking to Andrew Cross. This is going back in time.
Oh.
This learns people that you know. You can actually go through the face recognition and say, I know them, I know them, I don't know them. Let's see if I can pull this up. These are all the settings. Home Away Assist will look at your phone. If you have the Nest software on your phone, when you leave home, it will start paying attention. So that way you don't get notifications about yourself.
Any kind of simple automation like that just makes it more useful. And
makes it more likely
it'll be running when it needs to be. So.
You can have notifications via SMS or email. You can say when to send the notifications. Like I say, don't notify me if I'm there. Only when no one's home. You can say, you know, notify me about people. But also this has a camera, has a microphone and a speaker. And so that way I can also say, notify me if you hear anything. And then I can go back
trigger
and
by sound.
Yeah.
Trigger by motion.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. It also has infrared, 960 nanometers, so I can see at night, which is great. I can see the cats. And I found out the other day we have bats.
They are cute little furry winged animals.
You never see them during the day. So look at this. In the sound, I can say if it's a person talking, if it's a dog barking, or if it's other sounds. So you can actually narrow the sound.
Pretty slick.
Sound down. The idea. A lot of the
more expensive cameras I deal with actually include separate components you would have to integrate for something like license plate detection or face detection and things like that. So
familiar face alerts continue. This, if you pay for this, and I think it's $99 a year, and then they give you a discount for second, third, fourth cameras and so forth. Familiar face alerts, continue video history. You've got the activity zones. You can do time lapses, which is so much fun. You can watch the time lapse. You can tell it how the quality. This is important because I'm using all the bandwidth we've got, which says it could use as much as 400 gigabytes a month. But if you are bandwidth limited, you can absolutely turn it down to 100 gigabytes a month. That'll limit, of course, the quality. I like high quality. We've got a little bit of bandwidth from SonicNet, so I don't have to worry so much about how much bandwidth it's using.
Just a little.
These are fairly expensive. I don't know. What do you pay for your cameras? These are about $300, which is...
Well, I'm also dealing with wired IP cameras that are generally going to be less expensive than something that has wireless built into it.
That's true.
The 4K fisheye I just bought was $1,000.
Yeah.
But that's a kind of a special one-off
camera. As a consumer, I feel like this is expensive, but really, if you consider what you're getting, these are not that expensive. The real expense is, there it is, $299 for a single. They give you a deal if you buy two of them. It's $100 off. So, and I did buy two because why not? And I have to say the technology that's going into these is pretty impressive. The other reason why I like the idea of Nest is because historically Nest with their thermostat and now with their cameras has really been focused on security. For instance, my login has now two-factor. I know you don't like two-factor, but it prevents people from. You know, we remember the FOSS cam where they had a standard password and anybody could log into your camera. That kind of prevents that. You don't want people
lack of security.
Lack of security is not good in a home.
It was fun for the war drivers, but
yeah, exactly. So I think Google and Nest do a very good job at kind of securing this Internet of Things device. I love it that I can say, and I'm trying to find it. I can't remember where this is, but I can go through all the faces that it's seen, and I can say, yeah, I know him. Yeah, I know him. No, I don't know him. And then I won't get notifications for people I don't know. I've forgotten where that is in this setup. But that's a nice feature as well. You can really because at first when you start using this, you get a lot of notifications. In fact, I would turn notifications off at first because you don't want to get false positives. But as time goes by and it learns people's faces, it's really handy. I think I actually did it in the app, so it's not.
That's
on
great because if you get overwhelmed by a notification, you tend to start ignoring them. So
exactly,
once the system
gets
up to speed,
turn them off for the first week because you really won't want all of those.
I like this.
I am very impressed. I was curious what you would think because
tripod mount on the bottom. It's the simplicity of it.
It's threaded tripod.
Standard.
So if you want, although I have to say it's very solid and it tilts in every direction. It's fairly wide angle. I would say it's about. Oh, I don't know, maybe 90 degrees, so you're able to catch
it. It feels like a metal
It's nice.
Case
it's solid,
on it.
Isn't it?
Very solid feeling. So.
Yeah. And I'm really look at this picture. I mean, I really feel like that picture is quite good.
Did they say if it was rated for outdoor use or not?
That one is not. That's the Nest Cam IQ.
I was going to say, this one probably not.
It's not, but I have a very similar camera, which is the Nest Cam outdoor camera. In fact,
We were looking at.
That's the one we were looking at. And I think it doesn't do some of the same things. It doesn't do the face recognition, for instance.
I really do appreciate a camera that has a built-in microphone, though. That
you want to listen to my backyard?
we
could probably do that.
Probably sounds
that's
very
great,
peaceful.
That's a great quality picture. And at night, you want me to go back? There it is. You hear? It's pretty quiet out there. Let's go back.
Relaxing.
Let's go back in the nighttime. It's a little bit noisier. And look at this. This is the
Depending.
That's the infrared view.
Yep.
And I'll show you because the cats like to wander at about 2 in the morning. I think we had a little...
It lights up pet eyes really well. if the camera has enough dynamic range, though...
Oh, that's a bat or something. What is that, do you think?
An insect, probably. Right.
I hope it's a bug.
Right in front of the lens.
Oh, here's a kitty cat. There's a kitty cat walking through in the middle of the night. That's Hamilton. our feral cat.
Aww.
Isn't that great? So I have to say, I don't want a camera in the house. I decided these were in the house. This was in the living room.
Perimeter
this was in the
control.
Kitchen. And Lisa said, can you get, because it has a little green glowing eye, can you get that out of here?
Maybe not.
So I brought it into the office. But I have to say, I love the idea that I can monitor my front drive.
Yeah.
I can see who's coming and going. I can see what's going on in the backyard. So this is the Nest Outdoor Cam. And it's pretty much the same, you know, kinds of services, except for some of the IQ-based services.
And if you don't want to deal with, you know, setting up a local network storage or other cloud services,
I didn't want
getting
to.
All that together, yeah. This seems to have it all in one package.
You pay by the
pretty
month.
Straightforward.
But how much did that Synology cost? You know,
with 12 hard drives.
Yeah,
and
yeah. So I think
a couple backups.
If you amortize that over 10 years,
it's about a $15,000 setup.
I still might be a little bit ahead on this. And online recording is fantastic. So the Nest Cam IQ is the new one, just came out. That's the one with the 4K sensor. It has the ability to zoom in. It will automatically zoom in when it sends you it says, who's this guy? It'll zoom in on the Nest Cam Outdoor if you need it in rain. I'm going to say the price might be the only issue. There are cheaper cameras out there, but I think the safety and security of the Nest system, the ability to get this offline recording, and the intelligence and, frankly, the quality they've built into it, I think makes it a good buy. So I'm going to give it two thumbs up, a definite recommendation. I'm very happy with the Nest Cam IQ and the Nest Outdoor Cam.
Especially if they're providing regular updates, too, for their hardware.
Well, and that's the thing.
And they're around. It's Google.
It's Google.
So
I feel like I trust these guys. And you know, Stacey Higginbotham, who is our IoT expert and host on This Week in Google, also confirmed that she believes that Google and Nest really care about security. And of all the IoT devices out there, these are the most secure, these most protected. And that's really important. Automatic updates and things like that really make a difference. Let's take a little bit of a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the new backup and sync. Oh, we did that. Did we do that? Yeah, we did do that. I'm behind.
Backing up my data.
When we come back, let's take a call for help. We got the fire guy. The fire eater, Tom, the fire eater for Danger Circus is going to be on with us. And I think Robert has, we're going to have to answer this question for him.
I will try.
An over-the-air antenna. I don't know anything about
free
that.
Free TV.
You know what I knew, though, about?
Coming up soon.
I know about WordPress. I love WordPress. I've been using WordPress since the early 2000s. It was one of my first blogging platforms. And I ran my own WordPress site, self-hosted, for a long time. I've moved to WordPress.com, and I think one of the reasons I was just tired of keeping my own self-hosted running. You know, it was a lot. I ended up being a sysadmin. Now they handle that all. They keep it up to date. They keep it secure. Plus, at WordPress.com, I'm part of a big community of bloggers, business owners. There's a front page. It's fantastic. My WordPress site is leolaporte.com if you want to take a look at it. I'm pretty proud of it. I did it all by myself. There's a picture of me and Paul Thurrott. It is a really nice blogging platform. Now, this is just one of hundreds of templates. I'm using the 2017 template. You totally control it. It's very powerful. It was easy to export from WordPress.org, but I went from another site and I was able to export that. Everybody supports WordPress because, frankly, WordPress is the standard. 28% of the internet runs on WordPress, including some of the biggest publications like Quartz are running on WordPress. WordPress is an amazing platform. If big publications, bloggers, and businesses all can run on WordPress, I think you ought to take a look at WordPress. Be a part of a community and get 24/7 support when you need it. WordPress is robust, it's strong, it's powerful, it's easy to use, and it's a great way to share your voice. If you haven't had a great web host up to now, can I just strongly encourage you to move to WordPress.com? And if you've never done it before, you're going to be amazed. WordPress.com/NSS. Find the membership plan that's right for you and create your website. I have to say, I even blog more often because I'm on WordPress. It's easier. There's WordPress third-party apps because it's such a standard protocol.
I like the fact that they'll keep the back-end code updated for you.
Really,
on my host, if I do not do that, they start locking it down because it's so frequently used as an attack platform.
I know.
WordPress accounts are generally hammered.
Can I move you to WordPress.com right now, Robert?
I gotta
move you to WordPress.com/NSS. We got a pretty good deal for you if you go there right now and use that NSS.
Hook
we're gonna save you 15% on your brand new website, WordPress. All right, it's time. Hello? Is that me? Oops. Oh, wait a minute. Let me turn off my Nest cam. All right. All right, it's time for a call for help. By the way, that shows you how little latency there is on that camera. That was almost real time, right?
That was sweet.
Yeah.
Very low.
Tom, the fire eater, ladies and gentlemen, from DangerCircus.com. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how are you guys? Thanks for having me back on.
Oh, it's always great to have you on. Last time we talked, you were about to come to San Francisco with the Danger Circus. Did you have a good appearance here?
We did. So far, we've been very lucky. We're in our third year. We've never had a bad time, and we've never had a bad tour. So, you know, fingers crossed. It's
well,
day by day, sometimes entertainment. You know how that can be.
Now that Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey is getting out of the circus business, I think there's a big opening for Danger Circus.
Oh, let's hope we fill that hole. That'd be amazing. Entertain millions of people every year with a three-man show.
More
that's,
fire.
That's Tom on the right there with the flaming torch.
That is. That's me, and that's Carrie in the middle, and Chuck on your left.
Looks like Carrie likes to eat razor blades, which is not
Carrie's a magician. Houdini did that with pins and needles in his vaudeville show. Mm. Carrie's doing a 21st century version with double-edged razor blades live on stage. It's always progression. It's just like technology. You always build on those who come before you and then add a bit more.
I love it. You know, modern circus performing is fantastic. I'm just such a fan of it. Are you touring again? You're on a hiatus right now, right?
We're on hiatus for the summer, and then we start again. We're going the northeastern corners. If you're in the Midwest, up to about upstate New York, that little draw a little circle there. We're going as far down south as Tennessee and then as far over as, well, the coast right there, West Virginia.
Nice. You're going to be through Michigan. And here's the deal. Go to DangerCircus.com. You can find out all about it.
Yeah, please. Yeah, if you're in that corner, we'd love to see you out there. And the shows are – some of them are even free. Sometimes the colleges bring us in and they pay for the show. The most, our tickets are $25, so a very affordable evening of theater. A
lot of fun. So what can we do to help you here?
This is in no way related to that, so no chainsaw questions at all, no fire questions
good,
at all.
Good, because I can't help you with that. Maybe Robert
I'm good with a chainsaw.
I hope so. I have, like a lot of us, an elderly relative, and she's on a fixed income, and so because I am a tech geek, I watch a lot of Twit. I did a little cord cutting for her.
Oh, nice.
I got a Chromecast and hooked it up, got her set up. She already had a Netflix account, but showed her how to do that on her computer and her phone, etc. And then also canceled the cable and put in an over-the-air antenna because she spends a lot of her time with just the television on in the background, almost like company in the house, just something to fill the air with noise.
Sure.
So why pay? She was paying $175 a month for that.
Crazy.
That's crazy on a fixed income especially, but crazy for me. So we went to a big box store, one or two, and just proof of concept. Just wanted to show her, like you do with a lot of older relatives, look, it's not going to murder you in your sleep,
bite
you, or hack your email. Let me plug it in for you. She loves it. So now I thought, well, Christmas is coming up. Instead of the, $10 version I bought for her, why not spend a little money and get her something nice for Christmas? And so this is where I need Robert's help because I found a lot of blogs, and they all had the same 10 antennas, but they ranked them in different order, and I didn't really understand the mechanics or metrics of what they were using. So do you have an opinion on what's the best over-the-air antenna now that she's seen the cheap version works?
Generally speaking, the best antenna for you is going to be – it really depends on your location and your distance from the broadcast towers. Those two factors, even if you live somewhere where, say – like here where we are in the Bay Area, generally we have very good straight line coverage. But when you go over the hills nearby into the valley, suddenly as soon as you crest that hill, the quality of the signals you're able to receive just drops dramatically. You go from getting about 50 to 80 channels here in the Bay Area to about one or two.
Oops. And, sorry, that's my computer. In that case,
it becomes critical then to just understand your local scenario. And one of the best places you can go to do some basic research is the Channel Master website. They provide not only an overview of the problem of in terms of distance and location and the channels that are available, and are they coming from a single location or multiple locations. Once you can establish those, you can then select the appropriate antenna, so to speak. For cost savings, one of the very best antennas they have right now is the cheapest one that Channel Master offers, actually. It's a flat antenna design, roughly a sheet of paper, like that black one right there, good for about 35 miles. I find that some of these will come with amplifiers or not. I say always start without the amplifier first. Don't amplify unless there is just some particular reason to do it. It can introduce more problems otherwise. But for $10, and I actually ordered a couple of these yesterday,
that is one of the top rated antennas. There's one that's
Digital, right? So that you can get the digital stations, because very few analog stations left.
None. That integrated cord built right into it, it simply plugs.
Do you need a digital converter?
Not anymore. Anything that's
most
labeled
TVs will have
a TV has a tuner built into it. Okay. And if it's a flat panel of any kind, chances are it has a digital tuner in it. It will have usually analog, digital, and cable tuners built in. You don't need to run all of the tuner scans after you plug that new antenna in. Just use the one for over-the-air broadcast only. It'll save some time.
I have to say, over-the-air is the cord cutter's secret weapon. Because nowadays, of course, with Netflix and Amazon and iTunes and all the great over-the-top, you know, over-the-internet productions, you have unlimited content. But there's still stuff like live news, the
sports programming,
Super Bowl, the Academy Awards. You need channel 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 for.
And if you don't have a subscription service already to cable or satellite or one of the over-the-top providers, you can't even use those codes then to at least do streaming through that. Because I have a very similar setup with a Chromecast, an internet connection, plus an over-the-air antenna.
It's perfect.
And
by the way, the best HD is not over the internet, it's over the air, right?
It's the least compressed, highest
quality video.
It should be identical. Is it?
I think it's better over the air.
I think you get a cleaner signal over the air, less compressed. Cable folks will always tell me they do nothing to the signal there.
Sure.
It's up to the broadcaster, it really is. And as far as satellite goes, everything's compressed there. So, yeah, technically, I guess you could say that.
So you don't have to spend a lot of money to get a good
OTA antenna. Not at all. I will say there is a great review up on the Wirecutter website. They do have a more expensive antenna that they would recommend if you were perhaps having some challenges.
Like here, I really probably couldn't use that antenna you talked about in Petaluma. We're just too far away from Sutro Tower, the big TV tower.
My favorite thing is if somebody still left the old school UHF VHF antenna
up on
the roof. Those are the best because they're giant and they're already
there. And it's up there.
Run a new piece of coax down and into the house and seal it up. And also, too, if you have a pair of rabbit ears laying around.
No, throw them out.
No, use them first.
What? Really?
Use something you already have just to see what the reception quality is going to be. Give yourself an idea if you're getting one channel or 50.
Actually, it's funny that you said it because the channel I get here is channel 50. That's it. No, I'm not joking. That's it.
What you won't have, though, with a setup like this is a DVR to record with. And those...
They're Channel Master. That's why they have that website. Because guess who will sell you a DVR?
That's actually an awesome DVR, too.
Is it? You like that?
It works really well.
Or get the Silicon Dust Home Run, right? Your computer will
terrific,
record.
Terrific. And you can integrate that with something like Plex to do. And your NAS
might be
to
a lot
do
for
the
grandma.
Recording. Maybe so. But for live
DVR
broadcast...
Can I give you one more website? I'm curious what you think of it. TVFool.com. Do you know them?
Oh, yeah.
Another great website with lots of information and coverage maps that'll help you understand what's possible, right?
Because you put in your address, approximate height above the ground, and it gives you an estimate in terms of channel reception for the local broadcast.
It has online TV maps. It'll even do signal analysis.
Color-coded for your easy digestion, too.
This is a really... and it helps you if you... Occasionally, you still need to steer the antenna, right? It'll help you aim it in the right direction.
With those flat antenna designs, generally, you'll want to have them perfectly flat and stuck to a wall or something that keeps it from curling. I've actually had good luck just even tossing it out of bed sometimes. That goes back to more of the location and the signal strength. But I find a quick test is stick it to the wall. If that doesn't work, stick it 90 degrees and see if that pulls in channels better. Because it's really the convenience factor of being able to hang that antenna. Either hang it to the back of the TV or on the wall behind the TV just to keep it out of sight. And for $10... If it doesn't
work out,
that's
a good price.
Give it to a friend.
Yeah.
And I was honestly kind of surprised. I've used other flat antenna designs, and the fact that this one got so well rated from a good company and with a cheap design, I'm just like, it's a no-brainer.
The only thing keeping us from cord cutting is that we are in a, you know, distant from the big city, and we just don't get good TV signals, and there were a few things I would miss. If I could get a decent antenna, even if I had to put it on the roof, that would save me like $100 a month.
And that's where I would go back to the Channel Master website. That guide page is great. It gives you a better idea in terms of, okay, I'm dealing with two different directions or three different directions, or everything's coming from one direction, which is arguably the easiest scenario in terms of reception. But they've also been around for a long time, too, as far as that company and their support. And they're just a great crew to deal with. And I absolutely love that over-the-air DVR they've created. Looking to the future, eventually we're moving from something called ATSC, the current broadcast standard, to something called ATSC3.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
That's going to bring 4K, HDR, and the formats behind that.
Really?
Hybrid log gamma, HDR10. We'll see when that finally drops. We've already seen demonstrations of this. Live broadcasts at CES.
But didn't just the broadcasters just buy all the new digital stuff? Are they ready to go to ATSC 3?
We're a couple years away still. So
it's going to be a while.
I would say 2019, 2020.
Oh, man.
They'll want to jump on it because the system also incorporates a more robust signaling system. So reception's less of an issue. And for me, it's really about expanded color palette and the high dynamic range.
I love HDR.
It's going to look fantastic.
Really
4K
HDR.
Programming, and reduced bandwidth, mobile TV.
Over the air?
Mobile TV is going to be one of the first applications they'll deploy ATSC 3, 4.
You're going to have to do it over the air, though, right? Because my Comcast is not going to give me...
No, they're not going to give you more bandwidth.
I can watch 10 minutes of 4K, and I'm done for the month.
I know.
I'm going to have to get an over-the-air solution for my geeky setup.
Tell me
if
about it.
That's eating into your data plan,
I went over a terabyte three times. I'm on double secret probation now.
Net neutrality.
Yeah.
Go talk to your local representatives.
Tell me about it.
But there are some terrific options. You don't have to overspend on an antenna. I think everyone who has HDTV with a built-in tuner, which most of them do. The one oddball case I'll mention real quick is Vizio. They're brand new TVs.
If they don't put tuners in at all now.
They don't call them TVs either. They call them like
monitors.
Home theater displays or something. And that's pretty rare.
Does a Channel Master have a tuner? Must or wouldn't be able to do DVR?
No, it's built into the TV. If you look on the back of every TV today, it'll have
I'm just saying,
RF
if you're going to get a box for DVR, or if you're going to get,
those will have the tuner.
Something will have a digital tuner in it. It may not be the display. I kind of think, you know what? I wish they would take all this smart crap out of my TV and give me a nice, high quality monitor and let me do everything externally.
What drives me a little crazy is that built into, like, at least Samsung TVs, and I'm pretty sure all the manufacturers, is a full blown DVR for over the air recording. It's not enabled in North America. For whatever reason, I've given up trying to figure this out. But I see it in there. There's a record button.
Is it a hard drive? What kind of storage?
Oh, no. You could do it to a USB stick.
Oh,
you could do it to a local network.
So it doesn't have storage, but it has the capability.
Totally. At least probably a single tune or two. If you are shopping for a DVR, grab a dual tuner so you can watch one channel and record.
That's why I like my TiVo. My TiVo, I think, has like...
But I got to tell you, folks, like at least Comcast with that new X1 platform box, that to me is probably, if I'm going to go cable, that's the best platform I've used so far in terms of just usability.
Replaced it all with a TiVo.
I'm a Netflix, Chromecast, MLB TV, and all the other OTT services. I live in that world.
Does your mom know you eat fire for a living, Tom?
She does.
Okay.
She does. My mother and father are both, they're big fans, big supporters. I have a great family. They really like it.
But when you came to them and said, I think I might do this for a living, did they have any qualms at all?
What's the old frog boiling in water analogy?
It was slow.
I came home at 7 years old and said, looky, I can juggle. Aren't I cute? And then at about 13, I came to them and said, looky, I made $300 a day doing bar mitzvahs. Aren't I adorable?
Oh.
And then by the time I was 19, they were like, no, go with God. Have a good time.
Oh, God.
So that's at the world's largest science fair right there. That's the Intel International Engineering and Science Festival.
Crazy.
Awesome.
There are about 13,000 high school kids from all over the world in that theater, and I'm explaining the science behind fire eating.
Oh, that's
really
actually
fun.
What a great way to learn. That's fantastic.
It was also fun to be the dumbest person in the room with 13,000 people in the room. It was a unique experience for a geek.
It's humbling. I've been in this scenario.
I live that. That's my life.
These kids are 15 and blowing me out of the water. I was hey, nice to meet you. Good luck curing cancer.
Tom, great to see you. DangerCircus.com. Find out more about Tom,
thank
the fire eater.
Thank you.
You
guys have made my Christmas much easier. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate
it. Always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Hey, next week, Ian Thompson, the Brit, will join us. If you have a question for Ian or me, here's how you can get on the show.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
Mailbag coming up, but Brian Burnett is bringing back an old chestnut. Do you remember on the early days of tech TV, we spent a lot of time talking about cleaning out your computer?
It's critical.
I'd pop out. This is in the days when mice had those balls in them. I'd pop it out and clean it and alcohol on the rollers. You still have to clean your PC. Brian Burnett shows us how. 21st century stuff.
This is Brian Burnett, host of Know How. And, you know, summer's here, temperatures are rising, and one of the places you don't want that to happen is in your PC. And this is the time of year it might be a good idea to open it up and clean it out. Now, a lot of PCs will gather dust over a short amount of time. It's been about 6 months, maybe a year since I cleaned my PC, but you can see a lot of dust has collected around the fans. A lot of PC cases come with a filter, so be sure to check yours for that and maybe pull that out. And definitely want to do this sort of thing outside because it is dirty. And a couple of the supplies you're going to want is a paper towel, compressed air, and if you have it, isopropyl alcohol so that you can clean certain things off. Now, the way I like to do it is to first remove my hard drives, and then I remove a couple of panels, wipe things down with a dry cloth. As much as you might be tempted to use a wet cloth, you don't want to get water in any of these components. But like I said, you can use rubbing alcohol because it will evaporate. Get in there with the compressed air, blow around, get some of the dust to move around. And a lot of it's going to collect at the bottom, so you're probably going to have to wipe out a little bit from there. Wipe down a lot of the components. And then this is where I've got my little wet nap to kind of clean the edges of my fan here on my CPU. This is a kind of an overclocking CPU fan, but it looks a lot better now. I call it my copper softball because it's huge, but it does a great job of cooling my CPU, and now it's all clean and will pass air a lot better over the fins of the fan. Next thing you might notice while you have your PC open is an opportunity to clean up any cables. This is kind of an OCD thing for me, but while you're in there, it's not a bad idea to kind of reorganize things. And remember, when you're cleaning out your PC, think of air as like a fluid and that it's passing over these components and going out the back of the PC. And so the less things you have in the way blocking airflow, the better. So cable management is kind of an art and it's a little tedious, but when you get it right, it looks good. It fills my OCD needs. But once you get everything cleaned off, you'll notice that a lot of your temps will drop. This is a handy app I like to use to keep an eye on the temps of my computer. It's called HW Monitor, stands for Hardware Monitor. But after cleaning out my PC, I noticed a drop of about 15 degrees Fahrenheit, which was pretty good. And in the summer temps, that's a big difference. As things are heating up outside, you don't want your components and your PC to heat up because that's the number one killer of a lot of PCs. So be sure to take a look inside of your PC, clean it out for the summer, and keep things tidy. This has been Brian Burnett from Know How, teaching you how to clean your PC.
I take it.
Do you use that canned air when you clean stuff?
I have them around, but
you told me you used it on a running projector.
The last thing you want to do. Those cans are filled with flammable gas. So,
so you squirted things. Air in one end and flame came out the other?
When it hits the lamp module. Yeah. And how that projector continued to run. It was a loner too, so I had to ship it back. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I had to give it a good sniff, make sure it didn't smell like burning.
It's clean.
And send it back. The other thing, too, is they add a bitterant compound to those gases.
Because people were huffing the compressed air.
It's the worst. But I find that can leave a residue on lenses or glass or fine TVs. So I wouldn't necessarily be spraying this on something you want to then wipe or have to wipe. Or especially, like, glass of some kind, like a lens in particular. Use one of those, I forget how to pronounce it. It looks like a little bomb squeezer. It just shoots air
The bulb squeezers. Yeah.
One of those, or the EDVAC ED500, I think it's called, from a good U.S. company. It's just an electric blower, electric duster.
Right.
And that uses room temperature air. It can run for, you know, as long as you leave it turned on. It's not limited to until the can freezes over or anything like that. I think it's just a little more, and it comes with a nozzle, so you can get a good directed stream.
Better for the environment, better for you, and probably better for the PC.
Those cans of gas are handy for certain things, but when it comes to your fine electronics, especially like cameras and stuff, I got that, don't worry about it. But it's the last thing you really want to use because of just the residues and the flammability for anything. Just be aware of that if it's hot.
Most of my photographer friends use those bulb blowers, you're right.
I absolutely love one of those.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody finally got that through my head, and I do appreciate it. It was like, stop touching the glass. Stop spraying anything on it.
No.
I don't care if it is a
gas. It's like, you're ruining your glass, man.
It's so nice to see you. Thank you for coming in, Robert
my
Heron.
Pleasure.
Again, HeronFidelity.com. If you want to hire this guy, he did such a good job calibrating my TV, you and Scott Wilkinson. And then, okay, let's be fair. By the way, it was a Home Theater Geeks episode you can watch.
Totally.
Then Scott said, but I have to tell you, this TV is completely screwed up.
Oh, man, and, he said
and,
that?
Well, something like that. He said, now, Leo, don't get upset. It looks great, but the reds are off the chart wrong. Fortunately, Robert came back, and I guess it was something, a software issue, and once you came back and calibrated it, it looks okay, right?
We were, at the time, using two brand new pieces of gear that neither Scott nor I had ever used before.
Okay.
And it was to show off that gear as much as anything.
Right.
And that's like the worst scenario you could ask for, is walking into somewhere with, I've never used this before. Let's figure it out on the fly. And it was just like, no.
You can make it worse by telling the guy who just bought a $10,000 TV that it doesn't work very well.
That's another way. I believe you had a 2016 OLED. And I have seen something odd about that just in the...
It's an LG.
Yeah.
It's a B model. Yeah.
It's funny, but with the latest firmware updates, at least on the more premium series within that line, I'm finding that the color accuracy right out of the box in its pro modes is just about perfect. But it's
you said it was pretty good.
But its grayscale is really off. Wow. It's greenish. And if you try to overcorrect that greenish grayscale, you can affect that absolute color accuracy. So,
does that mean I have to invite you and Scott back?
You know what? I just upgraded to a tool that now does HLG and Dolby Vision output, I'm able to trigger those functions in the TV. So.
You should also watch Robert's podcast that he does with
Mr. Norton.
Mr. Norton, Patrick Norton. It's Don't tell me. Something X... VLXC. V...
Yes!
Is it?
AV Excellence. Or AV Excel if you're not into the...
AV Excel.
Into the whole brevity thing.
All right. Give me the mailbag, ladies and gentlemen. Time for a last, final few questions.
Actual mailbox.
Wait a minute. What's
this
in here?
Holy cow, it's a...
What the heck? There's a camera in here.
That's hot.
Hi there. Is this an IP camera? Are we using NDI to distribute the video of this camera from all over the world?
I see.
Inside here is some maple syrup.
Oh.
Is there... Oh, this was from you? Mauricio and Flor brought this from Montreal.
Oh.
Thank you. I'll just drink it now if you don't mind. And then what is this? This looks familiar. This looks like... Oh, my God. This is... Can you identify that? Do you have any idea? How many you guys at home?
Looks like a media player.
What if I do this?
Oh.
Now how much would you pay? This is probably the shortest lived Windows phone. It's a Kin. Who found this? Who had the Kin? This was sold very briefly. It was a Windows phone that Verizon sold that didn't really have a data thing, but kids could use it. I actually thought this was a great idea, but Microsoft killed it literally just a few months after they released it. And we bring this out to kind of commemorate the end of the line for Windows Phone 8.1. It's the end of an era. Now, Windows 10 Mobile lives on, but Windows Phone 8, which was a great, I think a great bit of progress when it came out, Microsoft has end-of-lifed it. So, you know, I'm going to put the Kin in here, and we can launch it into space. Maybe someday we'll get pictures of Pluto back. I don't know.
Slingshot it.
Sadite. All right.
That's awesome.
Wait a minute. I didn't get the mail out. I got everything but the mail out. Come here. Come here, camera. I'm not done with you. Wait a minute. There's more. Gosh, you guys load this thing up. What is this? What is this? What is this picture here? What is this?
That's Alex and them working on the TriCaster.
They were working hard last night. This is a picture of Alex, Alex Gumpel, and Mr. Cross, and David, I think. And there's the TriCaster manual, and they're trying to figure out. And that's Kiki in the back. She's turning the knobs. And I think it all came out quite well.
It's all on tape.
It's all on tape. Does kind of look like a TriCaster.
Things have not... the further we go along, the more it becomes retro.
La plus ça change. Here, pick an email, any email.
Pick that one.
All right. I will start. Dear Leo and crew, writes Jay. I am a gamer, currently in the market for 4K HDR television. I'm sure you all know There's nearly an overwhelming amount of variables and information out there. Well, that's true. What tips would you have when shopping? What would you look for? We were just talking about my 4K HDR OLED, which I love. Planet Earth 2 from the BBC on that. You feel like you're there. It is amazing.
It's one of the best discs to show off an OLED TV.
It is.
It's literally authored to the spec of that OLED. It's pretty amazing.
What's funny is when I first got an HD TV, I got the first version of that because that was how you showed off your HD TV. Now I have the HDR UHD version. It really, really does look good.
Fantastic.
So what should Jay be looking for?
When shopping, stick to your budget, number one. It's a weird scenario when people start approaching, say, $2,000 for a TV. I'm like, why not go OLED? That's just...
I love OLED. And I didn't pay that much. I think it was under $4,000 for that.
For a 65-inch screen.
Yeah.
And those are slowly coming down toward the $3,500 price point. Still not cheap.
And no, it's expensive, but it is a... And you still think OLED is a good technology compared to LCD?
In terms of the viewing angle, the best things about it, it has a very wide viewing angle, and black is... No light at all. So when you're looking at letterbox content, if you move your head left and right, you won't see that characteristic bleed or glare coming off the edges or that glow. In a dark room, that black bar just becomes part of the screen, and you just forget about
it. Beautiful.
And
I feel like I darken the room, and I sit there, and you know we're not very far away from that TV. We're about 6 feet away. I feel like it's immersive. We're in, we're on planet Earth. So it's really wonderful.
And there are some amazing LCDs out there, like at that $2,000 price point. If I was just putting that line down, Sony's XBR 900, the new 900E for 2017. They have a 930E that does a little brighter with a direct lit system as far as the backlighting goes. This uses an edge lit design, so it costs less, but it still produces that beautifully saturated color performance that is available with the new HDR formats and the new Dolby Vision formats. That's probably the most eye-grabbing thing about this technology is just that color performance.
Before we started the show, you said you were at the Quantum Dot Factory.
Yes.
Where they make the quantum dots.
Nanosys is one of the...
think I'm joking.
I was.
He was at the factory where they make the quantum dots.
I was watching the scientists work, and there is so much security there in case if something goes wrong.
Well, yeah, because you don't want a quantum dot explosion. That would be a terrible thing.
When you have good engineers in the room.
Do you think that's a good technology?
It is a necessary technology, and what they're doing currently is using these materials, semiconductor-style materials, to convert blue light into red and green to make a very robust, rich light.
This is for the backlight on an LCD.
Just the backlight itself.
Is this an LED technology or something? It is, but it's better LED.
The LED just refers to what's making the light.
A light-emitting diode.
So they used to use fluorescent tubes. And then they eventually said, there's mercury and other things in those, and we've not seen the performance we used to. They moved to white LEDs that had very poor red, very iffy green.
And you want as pure white light as you can because you're going, the way LCDs work, if I'm not mistaken, is the liquid crystal is just a shutter.
Exactly.
That lets color through. So you need a backlight that's shining through.
A plastic color filter with little colored windows.
Right.
And it's a very lossy system in terms of how much light starts in the back versus what actually reaches your eyes. It's sometimes a single digit in terms of percentages. It's often less than 10% of the overall light. So what they're doing...
Oh, less than 10% comes through?
Yes. In terms of, like, you have, say, 30,000 nits you start with, whatever the number variable is. But by the time it reaches your eyes, it could be 300.
So you want to start with a very bright light, but you also want to start with a pure light because you're not going to get a pure red, green, or blue if you don't.
All of these displays are what they call tri-stimulus, where it's using a tiny red square, a tiny green square, and a tiny blue square. You vary those three to make all the colors you see, put them all on at once, you get white. And so you need to start off with a very robust white light that has very saturated primaries that are combined to make that white light.
Right. And so that's what quantum dot will
What give they you. Can do with the quantum dot is very precisely size these things, and they emit color based on their size.
Right.
So they can come up with very precise greens and reds that complement that blue LED to create just a very saturated white light to start with, that then goes through the color filter and everything else. What we were looking at yesterday or Thursday was that they're now doing inkjet processes where they can then directly plant this onto a screen surface. Going forward, they want to get away from using blue LEDs and stimulate it directly with electrons. So electroemissive. And as soon as they get the chemistry right, you could literally do a one-to-one swap out for the materials that go into OLED displays. And that's eventually where they want to go. Next year, we're going to see prototypes for LCDs that, instead of having that tiny red, blue, green window for the subpixel, the blue is going to be clear, letting the blue backlight through, and red and green are then going to become emissive at the screen surface.
So the black light will stimulate them to emit a red or a green.
And
instead of having a backlight, that's very interesting.
The old school way of doing OLED was, of quantum dot, was that you would impregnate it within a sheet that replaces one of the components in the stack of the display, a diffuser layer. You pull that old diffuser out, put in the quantum dot one with blue backlights, and you've got robust white light. The next thing will be to integrate that directly into the color filter to get rid of yet one more layer.
Simplify it.
More efficiency. Yeah. Double the brightness is what they're going to claim. So we'll see on that.
That's a big deal.
Or double the efficiency.
Yeah, that's a big deal. That doesn't answer Jay's question at
all. No, not at all.
You should
No, but, okay, going
so
back.
So should he get 4K? Everybody's going to be 4K. It'd be hard not to get 4K.
If your budget's going above $2,000, you're looking at OLED. If it's around $2,000 and you want a super premium 4K, it's probably going to be LCD.
Yep.
However, there are terrific brands out there starting at like $650.
You mentioned
bucks.
The Sony. But Vizio, I think, is doing a great
Vizio's
job.
Vizio's solid. Also, the TCL P series is just...
TCL, really?
Running away with reviews.
So this is one of the Chinese manufacturers that kind of...
Roku OS. Beautiful OS.
I bought a TCL for my mom because it had Roku built in. So you're saying these are actually pretty good displays.
They're new 4K displays. Support the important things of HDR, the wide color palette, decent brightness, and 4K resolution. The color palette is really the thing that stands out the most. Compared to the regular HD we've all been watching forever, you're able to do far more accurately rendered, saturated color on the screen.
Sometimes they call this the gamut, the range of colors that the TV's capable of. And so we're seeing a wider gamut now.
Totally.
On modern TVs.
And
so that's the P-Series for the TCL?
TCL P-Series is getting rockin' reviews. There's one step back. I think it's the S-Series, I want to say. The only difference between that and this is the P-Series has a direct LED system that can do local dimming compared to the edge-lit system.
And these are very affordable.
But as far as the color and resolution performance goes, video processing, the Roku back-end, they're all the same. And I am just very impressed in terms of the awards they're pulling down. I would say, too, in my experience, for at least the 2016 models I looked at, Hisense is another great company. I'm finding that...
Another Chinese company.
Their QA is solid. I mean, they destroy their TVs to figure out how they can fail. They have expert witnesses who do the same thing I do in terms of looking at video sources, get familiar with content, and then look at your own products and compare them to others and make sure even though the charts and numbers look right, that visually you're seeing something compelling. And that's really what's going on. But that P series, I'm going to say, starts at about $650 for like a 50-inch screen, and that's going to give you a phenomenal picture and viewing experience.
TCL P series.
It's just, like I said, once you start hitting that 2000 range, everyone wants OLED, but it's still kind of pricey.
I love my OLEDs,
and
but it is
2017s are the best I've seen.
Oh, crap. That means you're going to buy a new one.
They did enough little improvements that added up to a nice, solid upgrade for this year.
So. Well, Jay, I hope we haven't confused you. But basically, with the 4K, you want the wide color gamut.
That's
you definitely
important.
Want, I think, HDR, right? You're looking for that.
That's going to be included. The one difference you'll find on a TV like this compared to, say, something from Sony or Samsung at far 2-3 times the money will be the absolute light output.
How many nits?
Yeah. And to be honest with you, it's no longer the case where... Initially, when this format came out, they said that if the TV was not capable, say, of showing 2,000 nits of detail, it would just clip it. Nobody's doing that. Every TV, it doesn't matter what its luminance output can be, they're scaling that appropriately. So even in
so you don't lose data. You're not losing information at the top.
Is it still the artist's intent, though? And that's a different question and a different topic.
Yeah. J.J. Abrams, he doesn't want you to see any detail in that sun flare. That should just blind you.
No,
right?
And now they're using
your eyes.
The big companies are using machine learning to analyze movies to go, when the sunset is, if this scene is a sunset, we want to do it this way.
Oh.
And if it's the clouded, whatever, it's there's so much machine learning that goes on into the video processing side now that it's I wonder what artists think above all else. Really is like, does it taint their art in any
interesting
way? I would hope not.
You got a question. Why don't you read that one?
Get it done.
I think we definitely answered Jay's question.
Efren emailed in saying, hi, are there any resources you recommend if you were trying to calibrate a 4K TV at home for movies and gaming? Thanks in advance. Any info or advice would be greatly appreciated.
Well, I guess this is for you also. I'm just going to sit back here and have a little maple syrup.
That's
good.
I'm
that's
jealous.
Good eating.
I'm so jealous. delicious calories. For most folks, you don't need to worry about calibrating your TV. You know, am I the person to be saying this?
You're a calibrator.
At least doing it yourself, there's very little you can do without meters and things like that.
You need the hardware.
You do to do
now,
effective setup.
Scott Wilkinson's always said, you get a new TV, budget in a few hundred dollars for a professional calibrator to come in.
Ideally.
But I have to say, my LG OLED probably didn't get any better from calibration. It was pretty good out of the box, wasn't it?
The white balance improved dramatically.
Okay.
Those TVs in particular have a very greenish cast.
So you really want somebody to come in.
It's too green. And it's like you got to knock that down and make it neutral.
So you're using some specific hardware. In fact, you can watch this episode to see them do that. That actually measures the calibration, the colors on the screen, and then shows the deviation from true
from spec. And it all comes down to this mixing of the color of white, because if you looked at a color chart, the center is the white point. And there's a specific spot called D65, and it's this very. An overcast day at noon in London or whatever it's supposed to be. It's simulating that type of sunlight.
Okay.
And if that white point is, say, shifted off toward red.
Everything shifted.
Then, generally speaking, I will say that OLED is a weird exception. I'm not going to get into the.
So you got to get that white point right to where it belongs.
But just by getting the white point back on target, generally that will improve overall color accuracy.
And you can do that with the settings that are in the TV?
Totally. You will find controls called the white balance controls, but if you don't have a hardware meter to read it...
You don't know what you're doing.
No, it's very hit or miss at that point.
Yeah.
What you do want to do,
though... This is my TV,
yes.
And there's the little weird doohickey that you're actually measuring.
Oh, there's two doohickeys there. Very expensive doohickeys.
Oh, are they really? All right. This is why it costs you a lot of money to get a professional calibrator.
It can
but
be.
But you think it's worth it.
Somebody rolls into your house with $10,000, $15,000 worth of gear and software.
Yeah, paying them $500 is not... So, not out of the question. So, I do, and I have bought those Blu-rays and DVDs with the calibration stuff on there, and you can get one from AVS Forum. They
totally.
Have a set of...
That's
are those
excellent.
Okay?
Those are good for confirming that the display or the device you put that disc in is getting to the TV.
But then you're using your eyeball.
Appropriately.
You're using your eyeball instead of that sophisticated device.
But for things like, say, the overscan setting to make sure seeing every
those
video
things.
Pixel.
Yeah. That you could do by AI.
The easiest place to start on most of any TV you look at today will be go into the menu and select the movie or picture mode preset, the movie or cinema.
Get out of the dynamic or store
standard.
Mode. Yeah.
And a lot of these TVs are set up out of the box to be energy efficient, and the picture might be really...
I always turn that off.
Yes, because it looks like crap.
I'm a bad man.
It's nice, that it gets its energy star rating, but it's in some mode I'm never going to use, so it's like click.
It's not good. Okay.
But that cinema preset, it knocks out a lot of the crazy video processing that's going on, including sharpness artifacts and things like that that can really affect video games.
They over-sharp those pictures, and I think they really don't look good.
And even...
It's painful.
The best sharpness setting on most TVs is zero, usually, unless there's something wrong and it starts purposely blurring the picture.
Don't turn up the sharpening.
That's if you have pristine sources, too.
Right.
So if you're watching most broadcast content with compression artifacts in it, especially if you start turning up the sharpness with something with lots of artifacts in it, you're sharpening every one of those artifacts.
Oh, you really see it, don't you?
So stick to those movie and picture cinema presets. That will get you most of the way there. That's going to be the best the factory was willing to do before they shipped it to you.
Right.
And that will give you the most accurate color representation, detail, minimal video processing, and for gaming, you might need to enable something like game mode to get a better response time if you feel the need.
Okay.
But and then again, like we talked about, the discs for, say, your game console or your Blu-ray player are great for verifying you didn't have the movie mode set wrong or the film processing was right or you're doing everything possible you can. Generally speaking, for any source device, you want it sending out the highest resolution progressive signal to that display, and that's going to look the best. And then those movie modes are a good starting point to get an idea of what a calibrated picture might look like, having a pro come in.
And you talk about this stuff on AVXL? This is the kind of thing you talk about?
All the time.
I got to start listening.
And Pat covers a lot of the audio side of things, too.
Ah, so nice. He's a real audiophile. Yeah, he's very serious.
That guy brings some amazing gear in sometimes.
Taught me a lot about listening.
I learn a lot about headphones, too, lately.
Yeah, he's a crazy headphone.
Him and his music. His lossless audio tracks.
For more, AVXL.com.
AVXL. E-X-C-E-L. Oh, my God. I can't even spell my name.
There it is. AVXL.
We just hit episode. Actually, I need to go edit episode 50. We have episode 49 up.
And is it audio only, or do you have video as well?
Yeah, just audio. and I'm still working on formatting and stuff, at least for going forward from 50 on. 49 is kind of like the weird experimental posting.
And so. HeronFidelity.com if you want to know more about Robert's work.
Track me down and let me work on your gear.
So nice to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Absolute pleasure.
You can join us yourself anytime you want, just like our friends here. But you don't have to bring maple syrup, although...
Are you kidding?
It's always welcome.
I think it should be required.
You want to hit?
Yes.
just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. If you'd like to watch live, we are on every Saturday afternoon about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC. Tune in live. Join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. And, of course, if you can't be here during the taping, you can always watch on demand. Audio and video is available at twit.tv/NSS for new screen savers. Best thing to do, though, however you get your podcasts, whatever app you use, just search for Twit or New Screensavers. Subscribe to all the shows. You don't want to miss an episode. It's nice to have them there when you need them. Oh, and we're on the Echo, by the way. If you want to watch us on the Echo show, you could just say Echo or whatever word you use. Watch Twit Live on TuneIn, or you could say watch the New Screensavers. It'll play the latest episode. I like that on the new Echo show. Mm. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on the New Screensavers. Bye-bye.
Oh, that was so cool.
I'm coming for you!
It's the mailbox game!